This is Daim Shabazz of the Chess Drum, and it is March 25th, 2012. And we have on the line Grandmaster Maurice Ashley, and we'll conduct a brief interview with him. First of all, I'd like to say how are you doing, Maurice?
I'm doing really well, thanks.
Good, good. Well, I know you recently took a trip to Iceland, and the Chess Drum audience hasn't we haven't talked to you in probably a good 3, 4 years. I interviewed you at the World Open. That was in Valley Forge, and I can't remember the year, but you mentioned that you were going to be making your comeback soon, and sure enough, you were in Iceland 2 weeks ago. How did you in find that trip?
Well, the trip was fantastic. I mean, Iceland is one of those great places in the world to visit. It has all these incredible sights to see, places to go, food to eat, and the organization of the tournament was fantastic. Truly one of the best tournaments I've ever been in. And I decided to go there because I had been invited there 6 years ago to do commentary at one of their previous events. And I was so intrigued by the place and the friends that I had made that I said, I really want to look for a moment when I can get back here. And it took me all of 6 years, but finally I did, and it was an exceptional choice.
Well, I saw some pictures of you on Chess Space. You were in the hot springs, and you had posted something on Facebook and saying how great the place was, and the nightlife was how great it was. So it seemed like it was overall a very successful trip for you.
Absolutely. Overall, from a chess standpoint, I didn't play as well as I would have hoped. But, when you come back from a long layoff, it's to be expected that it'll take you several tournaments to get back in shape. You witnessed Gadakhmovski, how long it took for him to get back and to his top level. So if I can get back to in shape, later in other events, then I'll be thrilled. But this first one back was definitely overall a big success.
Now, I believe you had 5.5 out of 9. Were there any games that kind of stuck out that you liked or kind of gave you a special memory from Iceland?
Absolutely. My round 8 game against Robert Lagerman, the FM, was my favorite game from the event. My best effort was a 21 move win with black. It didn't have tremendous content because it was such a short victory, and he really played passively in the opening and allowed black to just get a tremendous initiative very fast. And then some whirling dervish tactics hit him that just ended the game rapidly. So that was my favorite game from the event. Although I have to say that there were other games, particularly my round 1 game against a 1900 that I actually drew, that I found really fascinating because this guy played really like a strong master in the game. Probably played better ideas than I did. And coming from a 1900, it was like, how is this possible? But he played really well, and I got to give him kudos. And actually, his son, who was a 12-year-old from India, his son is 22, going on 2300 already, and he's a kid to watch for. So it was a lot to see at this tournament that was fun and interesting and made me happy that I had chosen it as the comeback event.
So, did you get a chance to visit Fisher's gravesite this time, or did you do that last time?
I did not get a chance to visit. The day that we were supposed to visit was they just put too much on our plate. I felt like you couldn't do everything you wanted to do that day because it wasn't just Fisher's grave that we would visit, but we'd go the whole Golden Circle and all. So I said it was too close to the tournament round, and I decided not to go visit this time around. But I have plans to go back to Iceland, hopefully within the next few months, and I will make it a point to visit that time.
Well, you actually inspired me to actually think about going there as well. It seemed like a very well done tournament. I was following the video feed and I saw that Ho Yifan did very well in that tournament, close to winning. Did you get a chance to meet her and talk to her any?
I didn't get to talk to her. I saw her, of course, several times during the tournament. She was very private and careful with her time. And so I didn't want to impose it all. She was always with her mother. And so I let them be. It looked like she was always preparing. She had a cell phone that it looked like she never kept their eyes off of. I think she was checking out lines and latest results and all that. She is a special young lady and a special young player. I'm very impressed from what I've seen. And yeah, she could have won that last round game against Caruana. And if she just played the right moves, she could have really put him to the fire. I expect to see her over 2,700 within the next few years. I don't know why people doubt that. I've heard some doubters, but it's, you know, she has all the potential in the world to be extremely strong.
Well, I asked your opinion on one particular issue concerning her. There's been some Facebook conversations about who you find in terms of Judith Polgar, the matchup they had in Gibraltar, where Ho Yifan actually won that game. There was the conversation is whether Ho Yifan is going to overtake Judith Polgar as being the strongest woman ever. What's your view on that?
In some ways, my view is that it's an irrelevant question. I know people are intrigued by this gender issue, and all, but I don't think that's Ho Yifan's goal. I think her goal is to be one of the top players in the world. And I think Judith's goal is not to be the strongest woman ever, or was never to be the strongest woman ever, but just to be the best she could be and maybe potentially beat the top guys. It turned out that she never was able to achieve this, but she definitely was one of the strongest players in the world. I mean, top 10 at one point in her career. And I think that's what Ho Yifan is looking at. I think overtaking Judith would be an intriguing issue for the rest of the world. You know, I think she has her sights set on where she should have it. Will she do it? Who knows? I mean, she has a lot of talent. I think she has a chance. You know, my opinion, I think she could be 2750 at one point. And if she does, then clearly she will have overtaken Judith, if you want to, you know, make that statement. But also the question of overtaking Judith in terms of rating is a tricky one, because ratings have definitely gotten inflated in some ways. And Judith established herself as top 10, right? Top. Mm-hmm. So in other words, Ho Yifan can overtake Judith rating-wise and still not be top 10. And Judith was top 10, like, definitely. So she has to become top 10, which is really stratospheric. You know, you got to go up there to do that. I think people might think that because she overtakes Judith in rating, that she will have overtaken Judith in terms of accomplishment. So Judith's accomplishments are special, never to be replicated by any female player in what she started, in her starting the movement. Mm-hmm. But Ho Yifan will do her – well, she'll carve her own special accomplishments. And I think we just should appreciate that. And – again, I'm not big on whether or not she overtakes another female player. I think that's kind of like a male question.
Right. I understand. Well, you know, there was actually an announcement that a match had been scheduled. Now, this was coming out of China, and Judith quickly refuted that tournament that was apparently being organized. And but perhaps in the future we may see something like that. Just it would cause quite a bit of media interest, and I think a lot of people would take an interest in it. I know I would. Judith has been one of my favorite players for a long time, and the things that she did early on in her career, I think you know, we won't see that, if ever again. We won't see it in a long time. But tell me this. Your projects, what projects have you been working on lately? I know you've done a couple DVDs for Chess Base. You did a tour of the Caribbean. I think you went to Six Nations. What other projects have you been working on lately?
Well, I actually did four DVDs for Chess Base, which I'm very proud of. These DVDs encapsulated some of the ideas that I've been thinking about for years that I felt I wanted to share with the general chess audience. The Secret to Chess was the first one, which has gotten an incredible response and is doing really well. And then the next series, actually a trio of DVDs on the topic of what grandmasters don't see, which came out more recently. And those I'm really proud of as well. And you know, you look at all these games and it's constantly being proven that these are the kind of moves that strong players overlook and that we can benefit from learning not to overlook ourselves. As a matter of fact, the game from round eight from Lagerman illustrates my idea of protected squares in really stark detail. The other things I've been working on actually are quite interesting, some less progressive than others. One, I should say, having less progress than others. One is I've been working with the Thurgood Marshall College Fund in trying to create a chess league among the historically black colleges and universities that they service. And they service 47 of them, the public ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been speaking with the chief of staff, a woman named Kathy Harris, and she's very excited about trying to push this idea forward to begin implementing chess across their universities. And it's taking some time, as all these major projects would take. But she's super psyched about it, and we talk every couple of weeks about trying to make this happen, not just for a chess league, but also to bring chess as a presence, as an instructional presence into the universities, so that these college kids get some of the benefits of chess and apply it in life and business,
mm-hmm.
such. So that's been a very exciting project that I've been working on, that I'm looking forward to seeing how that develops. Something else that's going on is I'm working with the Sankofa Restoration Project in Hilton Head, South Carolina. They're going to be putting together a historic event that everyone should be paying attention to. And it's the 150th anniversary of the first formation of colored troops in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the anniversary is this July. They have incredibly big names associated with the event. They have Colin Powell. Potentially Barack Obama will be speaking as well, and others, Alton Maddox, the lawyer, and they have asked me to participate in the event because they have created, through my approval, a Maurice Ashley Chess Classic. And so this tournament will take place July 21st and 22nd, where we'll be announcing it quite shortly in Chess Life. The U.S. Chess Federation, Bill Hall, president, is behind it. We have the South Carolina Chess Association also behind it. And it's just going to be, a chess tournament. We're trying to do a good event, minimum $20,000 cash prize, but they're working on making a $50,000 event. And so I'm really excited and honored to be a part of this kind of piece of American history and being commemorated in part with a chess tournament. So it's just another exciting thing that I'm working on.
Well, it looks like that I have to start making some plans. You said July 21st and 22nd, right?
Yes, that's when the tournament, Saturday, Sunday, when the tournament.
Okay.
Although the event itself is a week-long event, so it'll start before that. So, yeah, we'll be making some special announcements about that quite shortly.
I wanted to add the previous project you mentioned on the HBCU initiative. You're aware that I teach at one of those universities, Florida A&M University, and there are a handful of schools that do have or have had chess clubs, including the one that I'm at. But the clubs are very difficult to keep going because you don't have that many experienced players there. And once somebody graduates, they don't pass on the baton. And those have been some of the issues that we've faced over the period of time. And hopefully this initiative, actually Jamal Abdul-Aleem told me about it. He was trying to get my support. And I said, it's not a problem. I mean, I certainly would like to help out with a project like that because it's indeed very important. And there are several schools that have tried to use chess actually in the classroom in some courses. I've been involved with one course. It was called Business Negotiations, where we use chess to think of, decision trees and how to make decisions given limited resources. So, yeah, I think it's a great idea. And I certainly, if you ever need any help on that, you have my number and you can always reach out, and I'll be more than happy to share what information I have on that.
Well, I appreciate that. The thing I think that would be the game changer for this project for those kinds of schools and initiatives at the schools that you're talking about is if we could centralize it under one umbrella to create a league, to create a championship structure, to create prizes, then now there's much more motivation for to participate and to really organize clubs. I think before, you know, you just had chess clubs trying to do things.
Right.
But if you can add, and you can also add, maybe add a celebrity name to it, you know, and have me coming to all the schools and speaking. You know, you get a whole different kind of momentum that could be put behind this. And then it's not just going to be like, oh, what are we doing? We're like just playing in a cave somewhere by ourselves trying to play chess. Instead, you're suddenly part of a bigger structure. I think that's what people are looking for.
Okay.
And so that's what we're trying to provide with this structure. And me talking to this chief of staff at the Thurgood Marshall College Fund, and you know that's the kind of thing that they could really let it fly and let you know really excite folks about doing. So I think there's some strong opportunities here to make big happen.
Good. Glad to hear that. I want to ask you about the upcoming World Championship. This is in May. There'll be Vishwanathan Anand facing Boris Gelfand for the World Championship. Have you got any predictions, any takes on that match?
You know, I think Anand's going to win. I think he's proven himself as a good match player, great match player. And I think rating-wise and everything, I don't think I'm saying anything special in predicting a victory on his part. I think Gelfand will work very hard. I think it'll be an interesting match. I don't know that it'll be a close match. It all depends on how hard Anand fights, and I think he will really prepare in a different way. I think lately he's been on cruise control in these events that he's been playing. But I think when his title is going to be on the line, I think you're going to see, you know, the sharp claws come out. The tiger's claws, so to speak. That said, I am a bit disappointed in the world championship right now, you know, and I hear things coming out. There are other people who are trying to get involved in this process. I know this big company, Aegon, has gotten involved. And it just seems as if chess has found a way to become less and less relevant.
Yes, you know? I agree.
And it's really because of a real paucity of interesting, new, fresh ideas. You know, there's a deficit, some kind of marketing deficit. There's some kind of just maybe the people in power have been there too long. You know, so the entrenchment has caused them to take less risk. And maybe they don't know what they're doing. I don't really know what the story is. Even a world championship has taken on greater and greater irrelevance. And I'm really saddened by this. You know, I remember many years ago, people were arguing about how the necessity of unifying the world championship, because if you unified it, then sponsors would follow. You'd be able to argue to sponsors that you know, under this unification umbrella, you know, you could now begin to promote chess. And I remember back then being highly skeptical of what unification would mean. I thought without new ideas, new ways of presenting, exciting formats, exciting ways of presenting it to the public, without that, I don't care what you do, you can unify all you want. And it's unfortunately, it's been proven true that people think of chess as just, you know, because we love chess so much, we think that other people will and be attracted to it. And you have to work really hard to get the attention of the general public. And because of that, I think chess has been spinning wheels, really, despite all this new talent that we've had, the game getting younger and younger, more people to market. I think it's simply been spinning wheels, particularly since the Kasparov days, when he really put a lot of energy into it.
Now, let me ask you this question leading into sponsorship. You have number one player of the world, Magnus Carlsen, who has all this media attention, and a lot of people want to see him vie for the world championship. You've got Rajabov, you've got Nakamura, you've got Anish Giri, you've got a lot of young talent, Sergey Karjakin. Does that, do you think that will improve the future for chess?
I think it's where it should be. I think there should be a lot of young talent. I think those are great names. We should, you know, not so young, but relatively young as Aronian, who's also quite good. I think, but sadly, I think that's not what it's about. As long as chess maintains the classical structure that it does, as long as tournaments are just about players, strong players going to events and just playing and seeing what happens next, I don't see why it should be different from when we had great strong players from the past who were playing, you know, the up and coming Kramniks and Anans when they were youthful. I don't know that it should be any different. I think the underlying problem is chess. I mean, chess in the 21st century has to compete with other activities that are simply visually more engaging. They're faster. If it's basketball, more the athletics. So that problem of letting people recognize, having people truly understand how amazing a game chess is, how fun, how dramatic, how tense. You know, that problem is the problem that chess has never quite cracked. How to show that this is actually made for TV, that this is high drama. We've never cracked that problem. We just simply continue to conduct the events with, you know, with deep analysis, things that we care about. That was an interesting variation. Let's analyze again. Let's look at another move and another. It's like there's no way the general audience cares about that. In other words, chess players can't get out of their own way.
Right.
And chess commentators tend not to get out of their own way. They just keep on talking about moves like it matters. And I mean, it should matter, because to me, it really matters. Mm-hmm. But for the presentation of chess, it doesn't matter at all. What matters is that somebody is about to die. Somebody's on the precipice. That there's enormous tension in the moment. The guy has to make the right move or else nobody. And it also matters that nobody will prematurely stop the game with a draw. You know, it's all about the drama. And it's like somehow we don't see it. I mean, maybe you kind of see it, but then they keep doing the exact same thing over and over again, you know? So I really think in some ways the format has to be ripped up and tossed away, and some new ideas implemented that intrigue people, and presentation, especially now with all the technology that we have to make things look more dramatic and, you know, more interesting and charted in a way that looks fascinating. You know, what's the right move here? You know, is he gonna play the move the computer's thinking of, the GM's thinking of? And there's just different ideas, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you have to do. I think if it's just, oh, there's gonna be another match and there's gonna be another tournament, it's just okay, here we go again. You could be having this exact same discussion 5 years from now.
Right. Well, I know there was a discussion on Chess Connections, a Facebook group, talking about poker and its success, and perhaps some ideas can be used from the poker world for chess. I know you didn't mention the word poker, but do you think there's any relevance in that comment?
Yeah, sure. Poker is a fundamentally similar game. One mind working to defeat another mind. It's sedentary. It involves calculation. It involves analysis. It doesn't have the physical element, the big acrobatics that people pay a lot of money to watch, you know, in sports. So I think that there are some real similarities. I think that the thing about poker, though, is it is significantly simpler to watch and understand the winning moment or the dramatic moments, and they come often. The issue with chess is that the dramatic moments don't come that often. Then in sports, if you look, you'll see that there's a constant replenishment for the viewer, a constant replenishment of dramatic moments, right? That could be a game changer that keeps people watching. So if you take something like basketball, you know, they score a basket every so often. So you get to go, yes, and you get the satisfaction of score has been done. Even low scoring sports like like soccer and hockey, they're shots on goal.
Right.
And it's like, oh, that was close. You know? And if you have, if they didn't have shots on goal, then those sports would just would be boring. You know, it's the danger of the shot might go in, and if and that keeps low scoring games going. Games like baseball, for example, the threat, you know, guy gets on base and will he steal? Won't he? How close is he going to getting that run? You know, it just it, all those sports keep, and poker is the same way. You know, they keep the viewer interested because their threats, their danger, this threats of danger and potential moments when the game simply might turn and that'll be that. Chess develops in chess. These moments happen slowly. And in fact, it sort of happens all at once. And it usually happens towards the end of the game. You know, so in the opening, you know, you sort of like get a lot of memorized moves, not too much drama. Then you get the middle game when they're stopping to think. And again, there's not that sense of danger, like, oh my God, if he makes a mistake now, it's over. Mm-hmm. Though it's there, you know, it's patently there, but you don't hear commentators saying, oh my God, you know, oh, we better watch out for that, you know, hanging his queen. Like, no, he's not going to hang his queen, dude. Calm down. So how to keep the interest over the entire period is really the necessary solution, right? Like that's what we're after. And that's why I think it's hard to compare chess to all those other sports and why it's difficult with poker. Because poker, they got it. They got it. It's like, boop, you know, it feels like every minute, oh, somebody want a pot, let's go again. Boom, somebody else want a pot, let's go again, you know. And because of that, you have a real problem with chess. Chess has that problem, I should say. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate because anybody who has the chess experience playing in tournaments, you know you're about to die every time you sit down and every time you're looking at your next move. It's, you know, it's like, I got to find the right move. Or if you're not going to die, it's like, how am I going to beat this guy?
Mm-hmm.
Both. It's the tension is there all the time. So that, I think, is the main problem. And how to solve that, there are ideas that I have.
Yeah, and I think we need to find some ideas very quick because, you know, like as you said, you know, chess is being marginalized and people don't have the interest, even the players. Even the players, I mean, they're not playing. They play on the internet, and so I think it's really a problem that goes beyond the non-chess players. But it's even affecting the way chess players think about chess, and some of them have even converted over to poker. You know, I guess because of some of the reasons you mentioned. So it's it's going to take an effort from these organizations like the USCF, and maybe if they can garner some support and figure out a method, perhaps we can come up with a model that works for chess that can be unique to how we present the game.
Well, I mean, I hear you throughout the USCF, which is you know, our national organization. I think like the organization Aegon, for example, they have a chance, or maybe somebody like Rex Singfield in the St. Louis, you know, chess club, they have a chance. Although so far they have been quite traditional in their approach.
Mm-hmm.
And that bothers me. You know, I really feel like they haven't pushed the envelope like they could or should. They, you know, they're like, you know, they've had the U.S. championships. I did the commentary for the last couple of years. I won't be doing it this time around, but they do the championships every year. And it's like, it's just another U.S. championships. It's a great event. There's more money, you know, it's even little tweaks in formats, but you don't feel it making impact. There's no noise being made away from chess. And so you wonder, are we just so traditional to stick to the structure of the game that we don't do things that are outside of the box, you know, that... I mean, think about the strong players, for example. You take the top players in the world now,
mm-hmm.
all of them. How many of them are pushing chess the way Kasparov used to? I mean, you might say anything you want about Garry Kasparov. This guy was an ambassador for the game. This guy pushed and pushed and pushed. His method, you know, maybe he was maybe a little too certain of himself, if you will. You know, he had a vision and he wanted to see that vision go through, so maybe he rubbed people the wrong way sometimes. You can say what you want, though. He always wanted to make chess serious, like for real. He did all the great matches. He put himself out there for the Intel World Chess Grand Prix. He fought against the computer and really, you know, some say tarnished his reputation by losing to it. You know, he did everything he could.
Mm-hmm.
You felt the force of a man trying to make change, right? There was no doubt about that, right? No matter what you felt about him, he was really trying to do great things for chess. And I was always a fan of watching his efforts.
Yeah, he's actually in South Africa right now.
Yeah, promoting, you know, his chess foundation. He's still the number one force in chess almost. It's like, if you look at the top players, I know Magnus is getting all the attention now, but Magnus is too young or maybe just doesn't have the personality or mindset to sort of promote chess with any kind of big energy. And he probably feels like, why should he have to be the one, you know? But we have guys who are older, who have been at the top for a long time, who really just never did anything.
Well, I know Anand does a lot in India, but
in India, yes, that's true. That's true. But beyond India, maybe it's wrong for me to make it sound like I'm criticizing them. What I'm saying, though, is the calcification of the structure at the top of chess and the players just saying, this is fine. I'm making my money. I'm good. You know, let's maybe tweak it a little bit, but let's keep, you know, kind of keep the system in place. And the young players coming in, your Nakamuras and Karjakins, and those guys were like, yeah, you know, we're getting paid to play in these tournaments. That's not a terrible deal. You know, let's keep it going. That's not going to do anything for chess. That's just going to keep it exactly where it's been. And it's going to erode. And it's going to be erosion like we're seeing. It's like it's only natural. So, you know, I'm putting my big mouth out there. And maybe the right question is, what am I going to do?
Well, let me ask you a question. You mentioned Nakamura, and we both know him, and we've seen him in tournaments since he was a preteen. And now he sits number 7 in the world. We've also seen Caruana. We saw him as a preteen as well. What do you think of their chances to perhaps be a contender for the world championship?
Well, anybody in the top 10 could, and who's under 30, can make a push in, you know, in some way and suddenly be right there, right? I mean, even you look at Gelfand is fighting for the title right now. So, I mean, you know, he's 40. So if you're Nakamura Caruana, you got to think, what do I need to do to take my game to the next level to catch the two favorites right now who are Magnus Carlsen and Levon Aronian, right? I mean, I can't discount the effect of dramatic improvement. Even Aronian himself has improved dramatically in the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So, once you're that high, it's almost irrelevant what my comment is. I'm not a 2700 player. So what does it take to go from 2760 to 2820? I mean, you know, it's a lot of work, obviously. And to be at that level, I think they have a great shot. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
Why not? I mean, Nakamura certainly has a shot, although he has to solve this Carlsen problem, you know,
right.
Carlsen, you know, in kind of brutal ways. But I think if you were to say to me, Hikaru Nakamura, 5 years from now, the number one player in the world, I'm not shocked. I'm not like, oh my God, how did that happen? You know, I mean, give him 5 years to figure some things out. You know, it could happen, I think. But maybe, again, I'm not qualified to make those kind of judgments.
Well, I think with Hikaru, he has a history with chess fans. And a lot of people hear him make comments or tweets. And he makes some tweets that rub people the wrong way. But I think we can't deny that the talent is there. And most of his issues probably, I think, would be non-chess.
That's a separate question. Whether that's a, you know, his marketing is a separate question from his chess ability and his chess potential. You know, there are certain things I would not say because I might consider them inappropriate. And it's not like Nakamura is making statements that Bobby Fischer used to make. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, that's true.
By any stretch of the imagination. So the guy speaks his mind. He says some stuff that seems completely wild and out there, but okay, that might make him more marketable, you know?
That's true.
People love that. People, the press loves it when chess players are saying some interesting, crazy comments. Okay, he's the bad boy of chess. Hey, So, you know, Dennis Rodman made a lot of money off that idea. You know, it's like we might feel squeamish, we might be politically correct and whatever else, and the guy wants to speak his mind. Whether or not you agree with him, it's you know, our business. And I've heard him say some stuff like what he said about Kasparov I thought was wild.
Mm-hmm.
But it's his opinion. That's his business. I'm not – whether or not he can market himself later, first of all, he's totally marketed as it is. Nakamura is known worldwide in every corner of the world in chess. The only question about marketability is if chess took on another turn in the general public eye, which we don't see happening anytime soon. So why even speculate? Right now, he's completely known. He is invited to all the big events. He's one of the top 10 players in the world. So, hey, he says what he wants to say, and we keep it moving. And we talk about him, right?
Right.
It's not like we're sitting here talking about Topalov and Ivanchuk, what they have to say, right? It's like he gives us something to talk about, at least.
Well, I want to ask you another question. I didn't tell you that I was going to ask this question, but I'm very curious. The Chess Olympiad is coming up in September. It's in Istanbul, Turkey. And I know you've said that you always want to go to an Olympiad, and I'm not sure if you're going there or not. I plan to at least make an attempt to go. But there was a comment made on one of the Jamaican Facebook pages saying that you should play for Jamaica. And I wanted to ask you what your feelings are on that question.
Well, this has been proposed to me several times, and my answer is always the same. And that is, I always feel as if I am taking a place away from a Jamaican player if I were to do something like that. I know, I mean, I was born in Jamaica and, you know, lived there for 12 years. In fact, I'm still a Jamaican citizen. But I learned all my chess here in the United States. And I feel as though it's unfair to a Jamaican player, despite what the Federation says, because they're like, it doesn't matter, we'll kick somebody off the team. Oh, okay, they didn't put it like that. But they say, they do say they see the significance of having me play. And I see the significance as well. But at the same time, it's like, but I'm, you know, I'm as Americanized a player. I represent the United States. I've gained everything that I could gain as a professional being here in the U.S. And so I can say that I'm not really of two minds about this. I just think it's not the right thing to do.
Okay.
I just think it's not the right thing to do. Now, I have also gone down to Jamaica to help coach the players, to promote chess down there, and it's my home country. So I am devoted to seeing chess develop in Jamaica. They've asked me to be the coach and captain of the team that this one coming up in Istanbul. I would very much like to do that as a, you know, as a non-player. Mm-hmm. Non-playing coach and captain. And I don't see anything wrong with helping out players, spreading chess to my homeland, helping them to succeed that way. I don't think we really kind of stand a chance against the top teams in the world.
Right.
You know, we'll try to do as best we can, you know, for the players. And I get a chance to visit the Olympiad as well.
Well, so, I'll tell you, it's those tournaments, I think every chess player, if they had a chance, They should visit an Olympiad, and perhaps maybe one day or one year the U.S. can host one. The U.S. has not hosted an Olympiad as of yet, but these tournaments are just and they're like no other tournament. I mean, you get to meet so many different players, and all the professional players are there with the rank and file players, and it's just a festive event. And I look forward to going to Istanbul and covering the tournament and seeing some of these players that I spend so much time covering. But most of them, you know, I've met, you know, I've met briefly. But it's such a great event, and it certainly would be good if you were a coach for Jamaica and you were able to help them even get one place higher than they did the previous year. I think that would be a great inspiration for Jamaican players as you as a coach.
Well, I've been invited and I've accepted already to go. So you will see me in Istanbul bargaining incidents. That said, you know, the idea of one place higher, my hope is not for the team to be one place higher. I do want them to do the best they can. My hope is to help them to become better players through the experience.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the result is the result, but it's if they can become better players through the experience, through my tutelage over or guidance over the stretch of the 12 or 13 rounds of the tournament is, if I can do that, then they can bring that coaching back to Jamaica and help the players in Jamaica. And that's mm-hmm. really after. We're going to go, we're going to do well, and I don't know if that's going to make a big splash or anything, right? It's just, it's what can we do in the long term? I never like thinking about individual results and individual events. That to me is just very short-sighted. Of course, you want to do well in one event, but it's really about continuity. And so I never sweat a bad tournament. Do poorly at one event, big deal. You always have another one. I always wonder, what's the long-term strategy here? And my long-term strategy is to see Jamaica continue to get better and better, and to see hopefully the Caribbean as a whole as well continue to be a place where chess flourishes, because it's a part of the world that has a lot of potential.
Exactly.
By the way, I should say finally, I threw out all these statements about chess and its state. I mean, one of the reasons I'm back in chess is to maybe try to infuse some new ideas into the mix as well. So I'm going to be getting back in touch with you as some of these ideas happen, in addition to the ones that I've spoken to you about. Some I'm not prepared to talk about right now because they're just in their infancy.
Okay.
But expect to hear some more news that hopefully will be reinvigorating to the world of chess.
Good, good. That's what we need, especially now. All right, Maurice. Appreciate the call, and I'll be talking to you soon.
All right, take it easy, man.
Okay, brother. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.